everybody said when it first happened, oh, he just ran away, he just ran away. And mom knew that he didn't just run away.
Eric Patchen was a young Florida college student when he vanished in May of 1994 on his drive home to his parents' house. His car was found a day later in perfect working condition, parked at a gas station near a local payphone. That was nearly 30 years ago. He hasn't been seen since, but investigators believe this case can still be solved. I'm Katie Kaplan, an investigative journalist.
And I'm Em, a former special agent, and you're listening to Two Sleuths.
Warning, this podcast contains graphic content that may not be suitable for all listeners. All suspects or persons of interest discussed on this podcast are innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Listener discretion advised.
Today we're going to be talking about another case that Katie investigated back when she was still working for the CBS News affiliate in Tallahassee. She spent months connecting with Eric's family and friends, sitting down with the lead investigator, and revisiting the place where Eric's car was found. Usually, when we cover cases on the podcast, we gather information from all different types of sources and court records to put the story together. But with this one, you're truly getting it straight from the source. So it's exciting to give you guys a fresh look at this case. And to understand where the case sits now, we'll have to go back to 1994 in Tallahassee, Florida.
It was so interesting pulling the file video footage for my TV report on this story because it was like a time machine back to when I was a kid. The early 90s when rap music was becoming mainstream, grunge culture was popular, skateboarding was getting big, and when shopping malls were still the favored place to hang out. There was one video clip of an old gas meter that I came across, and it still had the metal numbers that would tick up as you pumped. They weren't digitized yet, and a gallon of gas would set you back less than a buck.
Computers and other technology were still new. So for our younger audience, this was back before GPS was widely used, before cell phones were common, and definitely long before social media even existed. With little to no digital devices, you can imagine how it was much harder to keep track of someone back in those days. Eric Patchen was born in Alexandria, Virginia in 1973. His family moved south to Florida about 2.5 years later, and that's where he grew up, attending local schools, playing the clarinet in his school band, and working small jobs to pay for college. That was until he went missing at the young age of 20.
This was an older case in our viewing area, and I stumbled upon a Facebook page that was dedicated to Eric one day. Now, whenever I cover a case for my TV series, Unsolved, I always get the blessing of the family first. So I connected with Eric's family on that Facebook page, and from there started to try to track down some of his old friends. Now, keep in mind, this was 30 years later, so this was not a quick feat, but eventually I found one of Derek's old high school buddies, and he was great for really understanding what Eric and really life was like back then. Robert Gillinger still lives in Tallahassee, so I set up a time to stop by his house and interview him. We sat down in his living room, and I set up my camera, and then we started talking. And here's a little bit about what he remembers Eric was like back in high school.
He really liked rap music at the time. He would always write rhymes on his pieces of paper to give to different folks that would be interested in reading it. And just he really, really, really liked his music.
This meeting was great because he also got out a bunch of yearbooks and old high school memorabilia to show you, which I'm sure really helped to put even more context into the case and understanding the time period. So much had changed over the years. Like even the school mascot, Florida High used to be the Demons, and today they're the Seminoles. There was a class photo where Robert and Eric are right next to each other, and he even had the note Eric had written him when he signed his yearbook.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. More than 3 decades had passed at this point, but there I was staring at Eric's signature. This was something that he had actually touched in a note that he had spent time thinking about and writing, never imagining that this total stranger journalist would be here analyzing it in the year 2023. It just felt haunting.
Yeah, you showed me a picture of what Eric wrote in Robert's yearbook. And this is what it said. Rob, it's been real. It's been fun. It's been swell. It's been dumb. It's been cool. It's been dope. It's been stupendous. It's been short and it's almost over. Lots of luck in your life to come. Eric Sol Patchen, Domino E, with an exclamation point where the dot was a peace sign. And we thought we'd share this with you guys because it kind of shows a lot about what we've been told his personality was like. And it also paints a picture that he was still just a young kid when he vanished.
Yeah, Domino E was actually his rapper, his stage name. And you're right, that's a really good example of what Rob was talking about with Eric liking to rhyme and what we'll learn about his hobbies and interests.
And when you were chatting with Robert, he really seemed to reflect back fondly on his time in Tallahassee, the capital city of Florida.
Right. It's really close, only a few miles from the Florida-Georgia line, an area that some might be surprised to find is less known for palm trees and more for those romantic-looking live oak trees that just drip with Spanish moss. Think about any of the popular movies set in the South, and that is what this area looks like. Tallahassee is touted as a great place to raise a family. There's lots of rural open land on the outskirts, plenty of diversity all around, a robust political scene that brings in the movers and shakers, and two prominent universities situated in the heart of town. Florida State is now known as one of the nation's leading public universities and sits at the helm of an area called College Town, which didn't look anything back in Eric's time like it does now. But for context, this is a vibrant district sprawling with college students from both FSU and neighboring Florida A&M, which is a prominent HBCU, or historically Black university. There's also a nearby community college, too.
And back in 1994, the FSU Seminoles were fresh off their first national football championship win, the start of the famous Bobby Bowden legacy. And of course, when the football team is doing well, it really invigorates the entire region. So it sounds like it was really an exciting time to live in the area. After graduating from Florida High in 1991, Robert and Eric kind of lost touch. Eric went on to enroll in Tallahassee Community College, just across town. And there he was studying to become a teacher, and he had his art and poetry published in the campus magazine. His mom says he would make money by selling some of his portraits.
Yeah, his family still has a lot of those magazines and a lot of his artwork around. One night, I drove up to Thomasville, Georgia, just across the Florida-Georgia line, to sit down with his little sister, Kelly Durant. She's grown and married now, but at the time Eric vanished, she was only 8 years old. Here's a little bit about what she said about his disappearance.
It greatly impacted my life. You grew up with this huge emptiness, and nobody could fill it. And just like a loss and just this hole.
Eric, or Bubba, as she called him, was her only sibling, and she remembers him as a very kind, caring person who got along with everyone. He loved music and fishing. She described to me the last day she remembers seeing him, which was the weekend before he disappeared. And she also showed me her favorite picture with him. It is still framed, and it shows the two of them huddled together out on a boat in the Gulf, when he let her wear his baseball cap. And she told me how she talks about Eric all the time to her kids, but that remembering the details is still really hard. She says his disappearance all those years ago literally changed the course of her life and that of her entire family.
Now, Kelly and Eric's grandfather was in law enforcement, and he tried to help solve the case. Her dad struggled emotionally, and her mother, who worked for the state, became devoted to her job as a way to keep busy. Later, his sister Kelly would go on to become a nurse. She guesses it's her way of trying to help people and fix problems.
You can imagine, again, she was only 8 years old when he vanished, so she has literally grown up wondering what happened to him on the night of May 24th, 1994. It was a Tuesday in late May, just before Memorial Day. Eric and his girlfriend of a couple months, Marissa Oakes, went out for a date night. I eventually tracked her down too. Here's what she had to say about that night.
Well, I do remember going to a poetry slam. That's what we call them. The poetry slams, where we went to a place and you go up and you read your poems. I remember him doing that. And I remember doing that with him. And somehow we ended up back in my apartment and hanging out. And we were eating Taco Bell that last night.
According to law enforcement, they spent the evening at an establishment called Waterworks, located in the heart of downtown. It was an open mic night. And Eric, or Domino E, reportedly liked to go there and test out some of his rhymes. Afterwards, Marissa says they spent about 45 minutes back at her apartment, which was a few blocks away, just off of the campus of FSU where she was a student. Now, this building, it doesn't exist anymore. It was probably razed to make room for the ever-growing college town area that we mentioned earlier. But Marissa said it was about 2 a.m. when Eric told her he had to leave.
Now, this next part was something that really stood out to me during my conversation with her. She says he left a poetry book behind and that they had plans to hang out the next morning. They were going to donate blood together to try to make a little cash. So she tried to get him to stay, but he was pretty adamant that he needed to head out. Here's how she remembers it.
I don't remember him being in a rush, but I do remember that he was there at my apartment. And obviously it was 2 a.m. And normally, you know, if you're at someone's house for that long, you might as well just stay the night, because we had plans the next morning at 10 a.m. So I think I was actually a little disappointed that he wanted to go. He said he had to go. And I don't know if he had to go just because he, you know, lived at home, or if he had other plans, or he did kind of seem like he did have to go somewhere. So he left, and then we did have plans for the next morning at 10 a.m., which he never showed. But I remember my feelings were a little hurt at that time that he didn't want to stay the night, because, you know, we were college kids.
Neither he nor Marissa would realize that their goodbye would be Eric's last.
Yeah, it was late the next day, on Wednesday the 25th, when Eric's classic 1972 Volkswagen Beetle was spotted in the parking lot of a rural gas station and convenience store. It was parked just outside the building at the foot of a payphone. Incredibly, it was actually his little sister, 8-year-old Kelly, who saw it. And it's a moment, she tells me, she will never forget. Here's how she remembers it all these years later.
So we're coming home from school and driving through Chairs, which we drove by that gas station every day. And I saw his car there and I said, "Look, it's Bubba's car. It's Bubba's car. Let's stop." And she said, "Okay, yeah, we'll pull in. He's at the store." And so then we stopped at the store and we went in there looking for him, and he wasn't, you know, at the store. But I'll never forget seeing his car and feeling like excited. I was going to see my big brother. And that's when, you know, it's like you got punched in the gut.
Kelly says she recognized the car instantly because of its distinct blue color. Her mother pulled into the parking lot and went inside the store, but Eric wasn't there. They looked around, and soon they had that weird feeling in the pit of their stomach. They drove home, but Eric wasn't there. And so they started calling his friends, but no one had seen him or heard from him.
Now, the night that I met with Kelly, the sister, in her living room, she showed me a binder of handwritten notes on the case that her mother had kept all these years. According to these notes, the sheriff's office wanted to wait to see if maybe Eric had gone out of town for the holiday weekend and just not mentioned it. So they couldn't actually file a missing persons report right away. They had to wait until Thursday, May 26th, to submit a formal report.
As for Marissa, when Eric didn't show up for their plans the following day, she said she thought he had just blown her off. And that was until she found out he was actually missing. At some point in the days afterwards, a deputy picked Marissa up and drove her around town so she could point out all of the places Eric would frequent. She remembers the deputy making an off-color comment about how they hadn't seen any vultures circling in the area near where his car was found, and he thought that was a good sign. 9 days passed without any sign of Eric. So by June 4th, 11 days after he vanished, a massive search of the area was done. This included deputies on foot, volunteers on horseback, and canines. They canvassed the area surrounding the store, but didn't find anything.
Marissa and some of her friends went around town posting missing flyers with Eric's face on it. The local paper even caught them in action and snapped a shot and printed it in their edition. Reporters from WCTV, my old news station, went up in that helicopter we just heard and filed reports from outside the convenience store where he went missing, but there was no sign of Eric Patchen. The current lead detective on the case is Leon County Sheriff's Deputy Kyle Stockton, who really was just a kid himself when Eric vanished. He took over the case a few years back when he was working as a detective in the Violent Crimes Unit. I also sat down with him to talk about the investigation.
We don't know why Eric would have stopped in that area other than that's a route that he would take from Tallahassee to his home in Jefferson County. There were no signs of struggle in the car. The car was locked without the keys. And whenever they gained access to it and tried to crank it, it did crank and it had no apparent mechanical issues.
Eric's sister, Kelly, says that back when police first started his car, Knocking on Heaven's Door by Bob Dylan was playing on the car's cassette player. Regarding the night he disappeared, from what we understand, Eric usually stayed at his grandparents' house in Tallahassee during the week when he was going to classes at TCC. But the evening he went missing, police believed he might have been heading to his parents' house out in Lloyd, only about 20 miles away. The deputy explained that, back in 1994, the intersection near the gas station, known as Chairs Crossing, where Eric's car would eventually be found, was a really rural spot. It was a four-way stop sign with pretty much only a gas station there. There were some residences spread out, but they were rural-type properties. Nowadays, there's a Dollar General there at the four-way stop, but the area is still pretty rural. There were no surveillance cameras at the businesses back in 1994, and during the window of time when Eric's VW Bug was left, the gas station and convenience store were actually closed. Now, they know this because he left his girlfriend's apartment near the FSU campus around 2 a.m. And the clerk, who opened the convenience store the next morning, didn't do it until 5 a.m. And at that point, she saw the Beetle was already parked there. So the ultimate question is, if he was heading home to his parents' house, why would Eric have pulled into this gas station that wasn't open?
Now, I tried to track down this clerk based on her name in old newspaper articles, but unfortunately, I found an obituary that matched up, so I believe she's passed on. Kelly tells me that her mother refuses to go back to this gas station and convenience store, even though they live in the general area. She says they have never stopped there again. But a lot of people think that maybe the key to solving the case was locked inside of that payphone. If the business was closed and the car was working fine, then maybe Eric had stopped to use it.
Deputy Stockton says that the previous detectives requested the records and went through each of the numbers they obtained. However, the handwritten notes made by Eric's mother say that, for some reason, detectives were only able to get long-distance phone numbers and not records for any local calls made from that payphone. Sadly, what could have yielded an incredible crack in the case ended up being a dead end. However, Deputy Stockton did say that other theories have evolved over the years.
There are several persons of interest that have been generated in this case throughout the years based on information received from various sources, but nothing has been able to truly focus on one particular individual or substantiate any of what has occurred.
Now, one of these theories involves a possible drug deal gone wrong. It stems from the fact that back in 94, the area around where Eric's car was found was known to be a hotbed for illegal drug activity. A large marijuana grow operation was even discovered during one of the aerial searches that was being done for Eric.
The detectives in the helicopter spotted the plants, and more than 100 were seized when investigators on foot found the area. The drug deal theory follows the idea that Eric, as a struggling college student and aspiring rapper, became caught up in the seedier side of the 90s rap lifestyle. Detectives say maybe he was trying to make a little money by dealing weed and unsuspectingly met some dangerous characters. And police tell me a tip from an inmate at the local jail a couple of years after Eric went missing seemed to support that theory. It led to another aerial search. The sheriff's office shared the never-before-seen case file video with me for my unsolved report. Investigators actually got a search warrant for a property that was not far from the gas station at this time. They brought in ground-penetrating radar in hopes of finding a potential grave, and they even dug in a few places. But at the end of the day, investigators left empty-handed.
Unfortunately, too, with the passing of time, some of these persons of interest have died and are no longer alive. Witnesses have passed away. So that makes it more difficult to try to solve this case because, again, with lack of physical evidence, a lot of what's available for this case is testimonial evidence.
And it's not just potential witnesses that have been lost, but investigators too. One source told me that a detective who had made the most headway on this case allegedly ended up parting ways with the sheriff's office under bad terms, leaving boxes of case files on a public curb.
And as of right now, the drug deal gone bad theory is just that. And deputies say there's no actual evidence that Eric was involved in selling drugs. However, Deputy Stockton still believes that this case can be solved.
I know that there is someone out there still that knows what happened, potentially even the person that killed Eric. And I just want them to do what's right and be able to give Eric's mom and the rest of his family some peace with being able to properly lay Eric to rest.
The case file now includes work done by more than a dozen detectives from over the past 30 years. Eric was legally declared dead in 2000, but the push for answers has continued.
In 2017, a campaign by volunteers from the Q Center for Missing and Exploited Children, a national nonprofit, came to Tallahassee to highlight Eric's case. The Q Center gathered Eric's family along with others of missing people. They lit candles and wrote messages of support on rocks. Kelly actually keeps some of the rocks that were left in Eric's memory inside her home, just a few steps past the front door. Another missing guy that was highlighted during this event was Mike Williams. His was a really crazy case. He was missing 17 years when his body was finally found buried near a lake outside of Tallahassee. It was actually found later the same year that this event was held. And it turned out that his wife and his best friend were having an affair and had orchestrated his murder. And after their love affair went south, the details began to emerge. And they've both since been tried and convicted. But anyways, the finding of Mike's body has really given a lot of families of missing people hope that they should not give up. There is still a possibility that their cases could be solved.
In 2022, Deputy Stockton was able to get a couple of plywood billboards posted at the intersection where Eric's car was found. They include a picture of Eric, the words missing in bright red letters, and the offer of a $5,000 reward for information that leads to an arrest in his case. Meanwhile, those who love Eric have been left waiting in a sort of limbo. For 30 years, his old girlfriend has wondered, what if?
I still think about it. And of course, I would like to know what happened to him. You know, I would like closure too.
And his old high school mate has wondered what happened.
I want closure for his family more than anything, but it would be nice to, you know, put it to bed finally that what happened to him. Or I would just like to have some sort of closure that, you know, we finally know what became of him.
His mother, who championed to keep his case in the spotlight for years, traveled across the country looking for Eric in the music scenes of Atlanta and Los Angeles, and she's also had to suffer through unimaginable false alarms. Here's part of an interview she gave WCTV years ago.
They found a torso in Lake City, and they had to call and ask me things about my son's chest and scars and things.
Now, she no longer speaks publicly about Eric's case, but I'm told she still has not changed her home number just in case he calls. And she still keeps his old Beetle in her backyard just in case it's ever needed for the investigation.
She definitely lost a huge part of herself that day.
And his little sister, Kelly, now grown with children of her own, says she's grateful that her doctor allowed her to be induced on the date Eric vanished, May 24th. Something that was able to help turn this horrible day into something to celebrate. Both her children are named after Eric in some way, and they know all about the uncle they've never met.
We talk about him all the time. We have stuff here and, you know, try to really keep him alive in their hearts because my children will eventually maybe still be looking for him if we don't find anything.
Eric Patchen would be 50 years old now. At the time of his disappearance, he was 5'10" and 160 pounds. He was last seen wearing a black shirt, green khaki shorts, and tan size 10 Dickies hiking boots with molded rubber lug soles. He would often wear a blue bandana or baseball cap. He has a quarter-sized burn scar on the back of his right hand. His brown hair was cut in a mullet style at the time of his disappearance, short at the front, top, and sides, and long in the back.
Florida investigators say they're looking for a witness or someone who may have knowledge of what happened to Eric to please come forward and to help bring his family some peace. You can do it anonymously or for the $5,000 reward being offered by Crime Stoppers. We are going to link that information below in the show notes, as well as post it on our website at twosleuths.com. We'll also be posting the link to his family's Facebook page dedicated to this case if you want to stay up to date on any new developments that might be happening.
Eric's DNA has been entered into national databases, so it can be compared to John Doe's when they're found. His family tells me they just want to bring him home and have a tangible place to remember him. Eric Patchen did not deserve to die.
But he deserves to be remembered. Until next week, stay vigilant.
And stay curious, fellow sleuths.